The ancient traditions in the Middle East, as we see through the Dead Sea Scrolls and the pre-Egyptian traditions, they were so clear of this time in history. They wrote entire texts. They wrote books, volumes, to a generation that they sensed would be the last generation to mature before the close of this cycle. They said to themselves, there will be a generation birthed with such power inherent in their beings, and perhaps a power that they have forgotten. Perhaps the pain of this world has moved them to a place in their lives where they've forgotten the great power that lives within them. Well, this last generation would be a generation of such strength that the challenges of the world coming to the close would push the people of that time to the very edge of who they believe they are. It would push them to the boundaries of the way they've defined their lives in the presence of one another. There are times when they would actually push one another over that edge. And when we go over that edge, we find ourselves in a place where we've never been before sometimes. The ancients called it the dark night of the soul. Perhaps a time we lose everything that we've ever held dear. We lose the lives of loved ones. We lose our homes. We lose our jobs. We lose our direction and our focus in life. Maybe we even lose our belief system. The great challenges of life will push us to the edge, testing those belief systems, allowing us to lose everything that we hold dear. And in that moment, we find ourselves in the nakedness of us and our world and our lives and nothing else. Then we must reach inside of ourselves and find our greatest strengths, our deepest levels of love, our greatest expressions of compassion to survive. And the ancients were aware of that. They said this generation is such a powerful generation that they will be the generation to bridge this moment in time. This generation will bridge all that's ever been with that which is yet to be. They will live the time the Mayans called no time. They'll walk between the worlds of spirit and matter and light and dark and time and no time. What they become at the close of one cycle becomes the foundation for all the generations at the birth of the new cycle. And this one generation has the power to elicit that ancient memory from within their beings and to lay that foundation. And they'll do it in the world of polarity. The polarity of the lightest and the light and the darkest of the dark, all the things that both have joyed and pained them, it's from within that polarity that they will rise above the polarity while they still live in it, choose to transcend the things that have hurt them the most, and those choices become the foundation for this new way of life. In their words, you are that generation. You are those who walk between the worlds. They even had a name for you. They called you, you who walk between the worlds. The choices that you're making this moment in your life that affirm or deny life in your body as an individual are part of a collective foundation that's being created in this moment. And that's exciting. I mean, that's very exciting. It opens up a vast array of new possibilities. And it's within this context that the ancient mode, the lost mode of prayer, becomes one of our greatest assets and also an expression of one of our greatest gifts in honoring one another and the creative forces of our world. When we talk about the predictions and the prophecies and the written texts, and so often we refer to the ancient and to the indigenous peoples of the world, I'm often asked about Christian traditions, and even the Christian traditions mark this time in history. They point to now. The traditions that we're speaking of now are derived from earlier traditions that are based in those communities that we called the Essenes, E-S-S-E-N-E-S. The Christian traditions focused on one aspect of the Essene traditions, and over time, through history, through translations, and through the filters of those who were doing this work, other aspects of the prophecies were left behind, and those are what we'll go into and explore today. So even in the Christian traditions, in the Christian mystery schools, they focus upon and point to this time in history, And rather than being a window of opportunity, in those traditions became known as a time of judgment. And it was a time that actually became feared by some people rather than embraced and welcomed. We'll go in and examine precisely why and how this is happening. Well, this is through one paradigm, one belief system, the prophecies, the predictions, and the texts themselves. We live now in the 20th century in the Western world in a very technical paradigm. We're looking at different modes of prophecy and prediction through what we call science. Now our own science is witnessing events. They're measuring the information. They're compiling data of phenomena that are unfolding in our world right now. Many researchers believe support the ancient prophecies. Our own scientists are witnessing, at very best, they're witnessing natural phenomena that are unprecedented in terms of anything we've ever seen in recorded human history. And the phenomenon certainly isn't limited to our Earth. It's coming from way beyond our Earth, in places certainly that some of us have never even expected to see. When we talk about the prophecies and the predictions, as different as some are in specifics, there are certain levels of detail where they agree in general. Nearly universally, the prophecies say that at this time in history, Earth is about to change. Something's happening to Earth. They remind us that our bodies are made of the elements of the earth. If earth changes, we must change to accommodate those shifts. They remind us that we are the union between this mysterious force that we know as spirit and the physical world of our bodies, made of the earth, that we know as matter. We are the union of those two. And that as we approach this time in history, how we perceive and how we interpret the changes determine how we experience the outcome. And the Hopi, I think, were very clear about this. They showed that there were these different paths. Some would perceive this time in fear. They would be afraid of the uncertainties. And in the uncertainness, they would lose their way and forget the path that they had come to follow. At the same time, there are others who would be very clear of themselves in this time in history and view the tribulations as an opportunity to demonstrate the greatest levels of mastery in giving birth to something brand new. All of them agree that our bodies will change as well as our earth. And this is a piece, I believe, that's been overlooked in many of the Western traditions. As individuals now witness the changes in our world, there was a belief for a period of time that we could simply build shelters in caves or in the ground during this time in history and hide from and shield ourselves from the changes. And when the great shifts were over, we would emerge and then go on with our lives. That no longer is the belief. Now, individuals that believed that years ago are also understanding that the changes are about more than out there in the world, that the changes are happening within their bodies at the same time. And this interchange is what we're asked to come to terms with. Well, the Essenes, and I'm referencing the Essenes heavily here, because their records are some of the least distorted and some of the clearest of all the ancient texts and the traditions. And they left us their perceptions, their viewpoints of what our lives may entail and how we may address the great challenges of lives through the texts such as those that have become known as the Dead Sea Scrolls, the Nag Hammadi Library, many of the Gnostic traditions that we see in the Coptic monasteries in Egypt and Jordan originate through the Aramaic language of the Essenes. Some of these texts go so far as to identify a series of tenets. And what I've done is I've gone across the spectrum of the translations of the lost books, of the libraries that have been found in various forms, and condensed very concisely now into a single work, four key tenets that were shown through their traditions that we have neglected in our traditions. The first tenet reminds us that we are unity by nature, that there may be many physical bodies walking this world. There's only one consciousness here, that one consciousness, the second tenet, the one consciousness reminds us that we are moving collectively toward this rare moment, this precious time in human history where we redefine the parameters of our lives and our world. The third tenet reminds us that we've always had a technology. We now may call it very precisely an internal technology that allows us direct access to the creative forces of our world and of our bodies. We call that technology prayer. And the fourth tenet reminds us that there was a science developed early on, thousands of years old. Some call it the most ancient science of compassion. It's through compassion that we're able to transcend the great challenges of history and life with grace. Well, if we had this information, our lives, our technology, our society may have developed much differently than it has without. We have found ourselves now on a path for the last 1700 years or so of asking ourselves to interpret the great changes in our world, the great challenges of our lives, without context, without a frame of reference. And it's brought us to the point where we are today. Look how well we've done in understanding what's happening in our world without this ancient frame of reference.